Thanks very much for the opportunity to come and talk to you guys today. I'm Principal Scientist in Strategy and Foresight at CSIRO, Australia's National Science Agency, and we kicked off some thinking on global megatrends back in the year 2009. It actually started not too far from here at a restaurant which was called Du Jour, which is an apt title that translates French to English as trend of the day. And we kicked off a project on global megatrends looking at big shifts in the landscape around us. It was primarily and initially for our own purposes, as science and research is a high-risk investment field. Out of a portfolio of 100 projects, most of them don't pay off. A couple at the very top end do something, and one is like Wi-Fi, which we invented here in Australia and now is in 5 billion devices worldwide, transforms how the world works. And that was actually radio astronomers and astrophysicists trying to work out how to look at the stars, and they found out the same technology allowed them to look around the corner of a room between one computer to another. So it's a high-risk portfolio of projects, and we don't know how things play out, and that's why looking into the future became important for us. And we open up a Wikipedia-style trends SharePoint site for all our staff, where if you had an idea of a trend, you could load it on, someone else could jump on board, add on top of that trends to build, via a crowdsourcing approach, a knowledge bank about the future and how the future may play out. We brought people together initially for a workshop in Sydney, it was, to look at all the trends in front of us to amass megatrends, more significant deep-set trajectories of change. And we draw upon the language first introduced by Professor John Nesbitt back in the early 1980s, where he wrote a book of the same title. So these megatrends are big shifts where a lot of smaller geopolitical, economic, environment, social and technological trends combine. Now, I want to run through the seven megatrends, which is in our report that we're releasing later this year, when I finally finish dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's on it, and we will be putting it out there as our latest view on how the world is changing around us. The first of the megatrends we call More from Less, and this is a story about resource scarcity of mineral, food, energy and water resources in light of the human population has crossed its 7 billion person threshold. The United Nations projects between 9 to 12 billion persons later this century is where it asymptotes. We don't just have more people in the world, we have more people with more buying power. We're seeing a rise in average income from, which is a fantastic thing for the world, but the income rises from $12,000 GDP per capita to $44,000 GDP per capita out to the year 2060. More people with more buying power is translating to increased demand for those underlying resources we need to sustain human life. Food, I think we've seen in recent times the effect on global food prices. One of the things I had to have a look at was the United Nations Food and Agriculture Global Food Price Index, which is a pretty good measure of how much human beings pay for food. It amasses all markets, all food types into a single metric. Now, during the 1990s, that was pretty flat. It started to creep upwards in the early 2000s, and in 2008 it spiked, which was a humanitarian crisis. Some 150 million people were thrown into malnutrition. A poor household in the developing world spends 80% plus of its income on food and can't stop buying movie tickets and buying more food. When the price spikes, it can't reallocate the budget, so it transmits to starvation. So it was a humanitarian crisis, but ironically, the best solution to high food prices may have been high food prices. It sent a production signal to the world's farming sector, and the Australian wheat producers certainly were one of the groups to be responding to that price signal, which calmed the markets and put prices down. It rose again February 2011 to its highest rate level on record, though, and it's fundamentally about supply and demand drivers. It's about increasing demand for food and constraints on supply, with 12 million hectares of agricultural land disappearing every year due to urbanisation and desertification are the key forces, plus a large conversion of agricultural land into biofuel production as the world's energy demand grows. So that's the challenges on the global food supply system. Our scientists have looked at this quite a few times, though, and we ask the question, does the world have the capacity to feed itself? You know, we've got to make 70% more food by the year 2050 to feed a hungrier and growing world population. The answer is overwhelmingly yes. In a biophysical sense, there is no problem feeding everybody in the world. 35% of the food that is made is wasted and thrown out, never eaten. We have a billion people suffering malnutrition and ill health. Sorry, 800 million in the Millennium Development Goals, the old ones. 800 million suffering ill health and malnutrition due to not enough food, and another 1.something billion people suffering ill health due to excessive calorie intake. It's all distributional issues. And even with modest improvements in yield growth and technology advances, we can continue to feed the world. So the more from less megatrend as we unpack, it isn't about not enough for too many people. There's not a too many people story. It's more than enough if we were sensible and wise about how we govern the resources in the world. Energy is put into that one as well, with a 40% global demand growth, mostly coming from China initially, and then it switches over to India and the Middle East. Energy is going to see, there's a huge innovation inside what we'll see with energy production, as with food production. In energy production, the big game changer about to hit is batteries. You've probably seen the Tesla announcement of the $3,000 Powerwall battery. I think that as that unfolds, that is a game changer. A Deutsche Bank report predicts that within 18 months, we will see a large number of the world's electricity markets have traditional fossil fuel sources reach parity in grid prices to solar with the battery pack attached. It was the technology bottleneck has not been solar panels for a long time, it's been the storage mechanism, and that is now being solved as battery prices are coming down and may come down yet further, and this can transform how we get energy supply. Mineral resources too are in gradual and permanent decline, but the world of recycling is about to unleash itself in that a ton of old mobile phones yields about 100 to 1,000 times the amount of gold, nickel, lead, zinc, tin compared to the ore body in the ground that we're used to digging up. So mining of the future will happen more above the ground as we get those recycled waste streams. The next megatrend we call planetary pushback. This takes into account the climate change story, which is well known, a world of more climate extremes and higher temperatures. It also packs in there the effect that human activity has had at the microbial end of the global scale. And we have been through the era of antibiotic discovery, which has been probably the most significant thing in terms of saving human life and allowing the human population to grow. We're entering into the area of antibiotic resistance, though, which is a concerning one, and I think it's going to start to dominate more increasingly the world agenda, because a lot of the bacteria, every year we have more and more bacteria that cannot be killed by the existing antibiotics that we've got, and if you're infected with one of these, you'll die, and they can't treat it. The death toll is much higher in the developing world, but it is growing right across the world, and it is a challenge before humanity that is as yet unsolved. We haven't had a whole new class of antibiotics developed for the last 30 years. The next megatrend we call the Silk Highway, and this is about the repositioning of the world economy. I think it's well summed up by a map by a London academic called Danny Kwa, who has worked out the hotspot of global GDP. So imagine in front of me a map of the world, and the hotspot is, so it's like a fry pan, but instead of emanating heat, the countries are emanating GDP. The hotspot in the year 1980 is the Atlantic Ocean, in between the powerhouses of the United States and Europe. In 2010, it's over Saudi Arabia. 2030, it's between India and China, as these two massive economies have continued to grow at rates of 6 to 9% per annum, compared to OECD economies at 2 to 3% per annum. So the whole world economy is getting dragged right here into Australia's backyard. There's also structural change going on. The Chinese economy's manufacturing sector has been surpassed by the services sector last year. So we are seeing it move at breakneck speed into an advanced services sector economy, which will start to want all sorts of different things compared to what it wanted previously. And I think that slowing rate of industrialization, you know, it still is industrializing, but it's a slowing rate, is behind why the iron ore price is $40 a ton as opposed to $200 a ton at the height of the marketplace. The next megatrend we call Forever Young. It's about the aging population, increasing rates of healthcare expenditure. In Australia, it's a shift from 13% over 65 to 24%. Japan will be facing a population that is 40% over the age of 70 years old within a sort of two-decadal time period, which is an unmanageable situation for the workforce, because that's a lot of people who are unproductive in the workforce, and that will be a challenge for them to be able to manage their economy. It's also associated with rising healthcare expenditure. The bulk of healthcare expenditure is the last 2 years of your life, and as we have a lot more people in the last 2 years of their life, healthcare expenditure is rising to unsustainable levels, and it's a sector that we're looking for a lot of innovation to be able to manage and deliver healthcare services into the future. The Last part of that we're introducing the story into that one is mental health as well. It's not just physical health. Mental health, I think the data isn't showing us it's getting worse, actually. I think that's initially what we were thinking. But in actual fact, we're just getting better at reporting it, managing it, and understanding it, and with a lot of benefit for humanity as well. But the statistic, I don't know the statistics globally, but for Australia, it's 12% in the last 12 months have had a diagnosable mental illness, and almost sort of 50%, like high 40% at some point in their lives. And worldwide, it continues to be such a huge issue. The next one we jump into is called digital immersion, this mega trend of how digital technology is changing the world we live in, which is an exciting time that we're moving into. The theory of recombinant innovation tells us we don't just invent a gadget and another gadget. It's not a skyscraper model of invention. We build a platform which allows us to have a whole lot of new ideas. You know, the platform might have been the internet, which allows a whole lot of new ideas to be built, and then new technologies are built upon those, and it's sort of like a inverted pyramid where we can expect a future that changes quickly. If we look at device connectivity, the Internet of Things, you know, when we had one fax, it didn't do anything. Two faxes had a bit of a network. 45 million faxes, which was close to peak fax, allows a network to form and function in different ways. The law firm in Jakarta can talk to the one in New York instantly, transact business in different ways, and a new businesses model. The internet isn't just faxes getting plugged into faxes, it's everything getting plugged into absolutely everything else, including washing machines now with an Ethernet connection that you can talk to off over your iPhone. Why you would want to, you know, if you desperately need to wash your socks during a meeting, you can push go. It's actually, though, quite a profound change because of the intelligence this network is getting. All these devices are getting plugged in. Automated vehicles are on their way, and they will be a mechanism via which we can reduce one of the most rapidly growing sources of mortality in Africa is car accidents, and around the world, it still is one of the biggest killers. Automated vehicles are there to stop it. It's technology that is developed and adopted, and it is waiting for us to change the road rules and the administrative systems, the laws, to put them in place. Already, most of the large car manufacturers also already have minimal automated functions that can diagnose and immediately respond to a definite crash situation, but full automation will start to happen by about 2025. IBM's work on the Watson program has provided us with a solution that is we can have a natural language conversation with a computer. That is also a huge game changer. It will get plugged into Siri, and then what we can do in interacting with Siri changes a lot. And it's getting plugged into the healthcare system as well, so that it can speed up and improve hospital diagnoses. The next megatrend we call porous boundaries, and this has a look at the rise of the peer-to-peer economy and how, you know, this solid structure that used to exist around me, let's say my organisation, CSIRO, is being broken down and has a network and an ecosystem happening around it that I'm in the future, I think, not an employee of an organisation. I'm a freelancer which works for lots of different organisations across global boundaries, across different disciplines. You know, we're seeing some really interesting merging of disciplines. And we're also seeing this democratisation of knowledge that is happening through the internet, and this is an exciting phenomenon. When NASA wanted to predict solar flares on the sun, which is an important challenge because they emit electromagnetic radiation and interfere with communication devices, so it's great to be able to predict when the next one happens, they went down a different approach in this peer-to-peer economy. They hadn't solved it, but they posted all their data on the sun on InnoCentif, which is like Kaggle, a crowdsourced data platform. And Bruce Cragen, who is an amateur radio operator from the Midwest of the United States and probably did not go to the annual astrophysics conference, jumped on board, put in place a model, and his headset just perfectly connected to this problem. It was 85% accurate at predicting solar flares and continues to be used. That is a wake-up call and a demonstration to us of the power of the crowd and how these networks can self-assemble, self-organise and solve really complex and thorny problems. So as part of the sort of challenges, the opportunity to solve some of the challenges before us is greater than it ever has been. But I think we will face a much more flexible, agile, peer-to-peer networked economy than the one we're used to. And one where computers and robotics do a lot of the jobs that we do today. According to the estimates from Oxford Uni, 47% of all the jobs we do today are disappearing to robotics and computerized devices within that two-decade time period of our study. The last mega trend we call
great expectations, and this is what happens to the human being in the future, their experience. And it's all about the important experience factor the individual has. You don't have to go into a shop to buy stuff in the future, but you will still do it. The online world wins in terms of price, product range, product quality. Convenience, the gap is being closed, but the social interaction of that experience will still draw us there. We don't have to go into an office in the future to do work. We can telework. But again, the experiential package is why we go there. There's a company in America called Brigo, which has introduced an automated coffee making machine, which is, imagine about five ATMs stuck into the wall of downtown Canberra or Sydney, and it has 200 sensors in there and has been trained to make coffee to the standards of the world's best baristas. And chances, it probably outperforms a barista in terms of pure coffee making capability. But the future will still see human baristas, because the person buying the coffee is also a human and wants that humanized experience. So a lot of this world of digital immersion is digital exhaustion. It's about a return. The digital technologies at work become invisible and load back the whole value proposition onto the all-important human experience factor. So those seven megatrends are a bit of a wrap of a view of how of forces that are going to change the world, with trends, with counter trends happening in them. And we use that for a lot of strategic thinking right across all different industry sectors here in Australia, and forming partnerships with groups abroad. Thank you very much for your time.